Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning health brief. Dr. Thomas Moran is the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Doctor, good morning to you. Let's talk first about the new COVID shots. Who should be getting these?
Good morning, Bob. Vaccinations in general and COVID, the best way to think about them is when you get in a car in the morning, you put your seatbelt on. Because you never know if you could get in an accident. And the way you think about vaccinations is in the same way. We get vaccinated for the purpose of protection. And the CDC has now recommended that everyone 6 months and older get a vaccination. You don't know who you're going to run into that has COVID or could expose you to COVID. And you want the extra layer of protection to protect you from getting sick to the point where you could get hospitalized or end up with long-term COVID symptoms and stuff like that.
And when is the best time to get this shot?
You know, start thinking about COVID as a more of a seasonal vaccine, just like the flu. There are times where fall comes in, our respiratory viruses increase. We get a flu vaccination every single fall into the winter months. We'll probably end up getting COVID vaccinations at the same time. If the virus mutates and changes drastically, they'll come up with a new vaccine for us to take, and we might need a booster earlier in the season.
I know cases have been up lately. The virus has mutated again, hasn't it?
Yeah, it is one of the viruses that changes frequently. The best thing that we have with it is we have the capability of developing vaccines that have ability to fight the mutation, and we need a little bit of a booster at times with it. So there might be a situation where you need a booster earlier in the season.
Yes. The other topic I want to bring up today is gut bacteria. I keep hearing and reading about how this affects you, especially if you have a hard time controlling your consumption of processed foods, sweets. What's the connection there to your brain? What are we talking about here?
So it's very interesting. There is a connection called the gut to brain, where there are bacteria. We have about 100 trillion, that is trillion bacteria, that are in us that kind of exist with us. There are some bacteria that are good and some bacteria that are bad. There has been some studies that have been done on both mice and humans that has shown that the overgrowth of one of the bacteria that leads to obesity can be modified or changed a little bit by the stimulation or growth of good bacteria. This bacteria is called Bloutia. Some of the mice that have developed obesity or binge eating have an overgrowth of this bacteria. And when they gave them Bloutia bacteria, they didn't end up overeating and binge eating. Hmm. One of the things, think of the obesity-causing foods. Those are foods that are high in saturated fats, carbs, high sugar levels, sugary drinks, desserts, saturated fats. Mice themselves can almost become addicted or compulsive eaters if fed this diet. And it's very similar in the way that humans go. There's a lot of research that's on in this of the connection between our gut and our brain and how we manage our bodies. Best way to think about it, it's really a balanced diet, low in sugars, high in fruits and vegetables and fiber, is the best way to kind of manage our overall well-being and health when it comes to eating.
And the beneficial bacteria, that's what you need, isn't it?
You need that, right. You want to think of anything else. It's like if you feed yourself foods that are, they might taste good, but they lead to the growth of a bacteria that likes that type of food, you can have more propensity to eat more. That's the research that is going on. Mm-hmm. Feed yourself good foods, high in fiber, more fruits and vegetables, lower in saturated fats, but good fats, you get a growth of a bacteria that's beneficial to your body and helps with not overeating.
Yeah, I know you've had a chance to look at some of the theories these researchers have come up with after these experiments. So what's the big takeaway as far as, you know, what we should eat and what we shouldn't eat? Any big surprise other than what you just mentioned and what we've heard about seemingly forever?
I don't think there's a big surprise. It kind of comes back to a little bit of common sense. The better we eat and fuel our bodies, the healthier we'll be. I think there's going to be more and more research on this of what are the types of foods that stimulate the good bacteria growth. And there's bacteria that's, you know, implicated in other diseases of the gut that can cause us ulcers and changes in the way that our cells function in our body also. So I think a healthy diet leads to a healthy body, which helps you live a healthy life.
Yep, that's the word, always. The Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital is Dr. Thomas Moran. Doctor, as you know, and I'm sure as you were happy to hear, Ken Griffin, who left our city for Miami a couple of years ago, recently announced a $10 million gift to Northwestern Medicine to fund research into esophageal diseases. And I was reading about this, and forecasting suggests that the incidence of esophageal cancer in patients 40 to 65 years old will nearly double over the next 15 years. Do we know why?
You know, I think of it as our diet has changed. There's been there's like an esophageal disease belt in the Asian countries where they have more incidence of esophageal diseases and cancer. Part of that is their diet. They drink hot foods, hot liquids, and it could cause changes in the cells. So our diet does play a role into it. The other risk factors are smoking, alcohol, human papillomavirus infections, and then one of the biggest things that can lead to it is uncontrolled frequent gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that these cases of the diseases, and also in some cases cancer, are going up, and it's younger people too. What could be the cause of that?
You know, our younger populations are getting more exposed to those factors that increase the incidence of damage to your cells. So like I said, with the risk factors, alcohol consumption, untreated GERD, our diet plays a huge role into that. Obesity also plays a role. And yes, the incidence in 40 to 65 year olds is really, like you said, going to double probably in the next 15 years. That's why gifts like this from Ken Griffin for research and therapeutics to help individuals that have esophageal disease is huge. I mean, esophageal cancer is the sixth most common cancer in the world. More and more people, when you start looking at the incidence of the esophageal diseases increasing, there's going to be more individuals that kind of trip over into the cancer of the esophagus. And the research, the gifts that help and fuel this research, really are going to help a significant number of people.
Have there been any studies that examine a possible link between stress and these types of diseases, your mental health?
When you start thinking about mental health and stress, there's a lot of components of eating or alcohol consumption or increase in smoking for some individuals that are there that increases the overall stress on our cells of our GI tract. Think of your GI tract. It's like a constantly abraded, and foods are passed over it, hot liquids are passed over it. Those cells are constantly exposed. When they get exposed and they have a fundamental change in their makeup, they kind of convert into a precancerous cells that are there. That's why it's important to get treated when you start having symptoms of reflux that is uncontrolled, not just infrequent, like you ate and then you're feeling like, oh my God, I have a little bit of heartburn and everything. Mm-hmm. It's when it's on a regular basis that it's constantly happening and you're taking Tums or you're trying to self-treat with over-the-counter meds, mm-hmm. it's time to go get checked. Mm-hmm. Because management of it helps prevent a lot of the progression of the disease.
Well, it's another reason to get your rest, get your nap in, and relax. And there's a very interesting thing going on in, Scandinavian countries like Sweden, Norway, and Denmark. And it's about a sleeping style called the Scandinavian sleep method that it's getting very popular there. Well, what do we know about this, and is there anything to this? I know it's it's gone viral on social media there. What do you know about this?
Well, there is the sleep divorce where individuals, partners sleep in separate beds completely so they could get a good night's sleep. Think of past Dick Van Dyke shows of Rob and Laura Petrie sleeping in separate beds. And then you have the Scandinavian way is you sleep in the same bed because of the companionship and comfort of sleeping in the same bed, but you have separate blankets. Part of that is when you think of sleeping, there's tossing and turning and rolling. When you do that, the blankets get pulled. If it's cold and someone's hot, it changes or disturbs your sleep. So having separate blankets allows you to self-regulate and limits those disturbances that wake you up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, some of the sleep experts have commented on this, saying, yeah, they're all for this as long as both parties are on board. That's important,
correct,
isn't it?
Or you really go from a sleep divorce to a divorce.
Right. Let me get to a couple of questions from listeners back to the subject of COVID and the vaccine. Why are we seeing recommendations to get the flu and COVID shots together? I thought our immune system needs to work on only one thing at a time optimally.
You know, best way to think about vaccinations, especially as we go into respiratory season in the fall, is to think of going in. If you're going to get your vaccinations, you should get your vaccinations consistently at the same time to protect you, because that's when those diseases happen. Our immune system is capable of handling the vaccinations to produce the antibodies that we need to protect us. It's not, one's not going to affect the other one. And have a little bit of, just think of common sense of making the appointment to get in. You might as well get both vaccinations at once to give you your vaccination seatbelt, is the best way to think about it.
Yeah, some people want to know if there's a reaction, a bad reaction, and if you get the shots together, you don't know which shot you're having trouble with. Right.
You know, it's a good question. Any one of these side effects of vaccination, and when you think about it, it's our body is starting to make antibodies. There is some achiness that occurs. You can have a low-grade fever, soreness at the injection site that's there. Those are very common. Those aren't bad things or side effects. Those are your body saying, hey, I'm taking this vaccination and I'm starting to produce the antibodies. So it's working. The other ones are you can get vaccination really reactions where you can get a localized kind of inflammation or infection that is there, sometimes swollen lymph nodes that occur. But those are very infrequent overall. And the protection you get from the vaccine vastly outweighs the risk of the side effects from the vaccine.
Good advice, as always, from Dr. Thomas Moran, Northwestern Medicine. Thank you. Have a good holiday, Doctor.
You also, Bob. Take care.